Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Best Ever You Show with your host, Elizabeth Hamilton Guarino, CEO and founder of the Best Ever You Network, helping you live your life to the fullest. How? Real people, including celebrities, real advice, real places, products, and businesses, real life stories. It's all right here for you with this radio show, printed magazine, websites, community, and more. Remember to visit us online, too, at besteveryou.com. And now here's your host, CEO and founder of the Best Ever You Network, Elizabeth Hamilton Guarino.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. Hey, that intro worked. Yesterday it didn't. So we're off in the right direction. Good afternoon, everyone, and happy, I think, second day back to school with all the kiddies. Or maybe it's the second week. I know here in Maine, the kids went back to school over the past 2 days at the high school and elementary schools and stuff like that. So I feel kind of like shouting, I'm free, I'm free. But I'm tired. But anyway, I hope all of you are having a wonderful day, and I'm so thankful that you're listening to the show. This is going to be a great hour. And in the spirit of we all are human, Richard, I forgot to ask you how to pronounce your last name. So how do you say your last name?
It's Probst.
Probst, okay, I would have guessed right, but we are blessed today to have Richard Probst with us. I know we were joking around before we went on the air, and then the intro started to play, and I'm like, oh, darn it, I forgot to ask him how to say his last name. Oh, well, you know, what are you going to do? Anyway, I hope as you're listening along with us today, we're going to learn all about Richard and everything that he does. He's an author. He's amazing. He's the founder of this tenderness tour that we're going to learn all about. He's the author of The Hallelujah Life, and also has, you're an independent film critic, and your website there is, I'm searching for it, theindependentcritic.com. So you can learn all about him online as you're listening, and, you know, let's, what do you want to talk about first? You want to talk about the tenderness tour?
Let's talk about the tenderness tour, since I'm actually coming home from it literally right now. So,
yeah, where are you?
I'm actually I'm in a vehicle for the first time in about 5 days.
Wow.
yeah, I've been traveling by wheelchair. I'm on my 23rd annual tenderness tour. I've been wheeling through Elkhart County, Indiana, and I do mean wheeling. I'm in a wheelchair, and basically I've been wheeling from city to city, raising funds for a children's organization in Elkhart. Called Child and Parent Services Incorporated, and speaking to youth groups, speaking to churches, talking to mayors, talking to the media, doing just about anything I can in terms of talking about child abuse prevention, what the community can do, what I can do, what, you know, your average Joe can do. You know, basically sharing that there's always hope that one person makes a difference in the world, and just trying to share my own message of, you know, overcoming my own past.
Yeah, and, you know, I've read your book, and I absolutely loved it. You sent it to me, and you were, like, a little bit scared to send it to me, and I'm like, no, this is a great book, and I hope everybody in the world reads this book, because you're such a shining example of, I don't know how you do it. I mean, you don't give up.
No, I don't give up.
No?
No, I don't. I don't give up. I'm usually smiling. I certainly have my challenging days, and I acknowledge the challenges. But I think one of the joys of life is kind of finding all the different ways that you can prove that love is more powerful than hate. And so that, to me, is one of my personal challenges. And even when I'm on the road, when I'm on the tour, for me, one of the great challenges is I don't want people to see this, you know, this poor guy wheeling down the road who looks like he's suffering. I want them to really believe that I'm having the time of my life, even if I'm wheeling 20, 30 miles in horrible weather, which I had a little bit of on this road over the last few days. And I think for the most part, I do succeed at that.
Yeah. Now, you've been doing this since 1989. What made you start doing this in the first place?
Okay. Yeah, I started in 89 with a 41-day, 1,000-mile wheelchair tour. I went around the border of Indiana, and I zigzagged Indiana a couple of times. And it really started out definitely as part of my own healing process. I was I tell people that at that point in my life, like the year before that first tour, I'd probably lost everything a human being could lose. You know, my wife had committed suicide. She had also taken our newborn daughter with her. I was living in my car for a good period of that time. A lot of the grief caused me to, you know, not take as good a care of myself as I needed to. I already had spina bifida, which I was born with. But I injured my legs, ended up losing both feet that year. So, I mean, literally, I mean, I lost my family, I lost my finances, I lost part of my body, all within a year. And so when I went to that first tour, I was really at this point of desperation, of wanting to find some hope in the world, not really convinced that I actually would find some hope in the world. Because up to that point, you know, my life had been filled with a lot of violence and a lot of challenge. So I really didn't know what to expect. I didn't know if I could succeed. I knew that it was a crazy goal to wheel around the state, and I was wheeling around it alone. But, you know, I headed out that first day and almost immediately started to feel the impact of, you know, wheeling into a community that wanted to hear this message of hope and wanted to hear my story. You know, they wanted to hear my story, and I met people who were willing to listen. I was accepted into the first town I went into by a fire chief who welcomed me into his town and invited me to spend the night, you know, in the fire station, which, you know, I don't recommend to anyone because they're very noisy if you're not used to it. It drove me nuts, but it was such a cool experience. I had left town with $20 in my pocket and a backpack on the wheelchair, and for 41 days I traveled alone, and I never went without a place to stay. I never went without food when I needed food. People would show up in the middle of farmland Indiana, and they would just be welcoming and hospitable and gentle, and this concept of finding tenderness in the world, I truly found it. And so I came home with a mission. Yeah, you know, because I figured, okay, if I'd lived 25 years of my life not realizing that there were truly these incredible people in the world, and that there was all this hope that we could break these cycles, and I knew there were other people, you know, who also needed to hear that message. And I thought, you know, who else to give it to them? So I became that, or at least one of those people.
So you're the founder and director of the Tenderness Tour, and again, it's an India-based organization, and it's really committed to giving and establishing a peaceful home for every child. And what you do is when you're on these tours, or probably at any moment during the year, you donate 100 of the funds that you get to children's organizations, probably worldwide at this point, I'm guessing, if it's been around here almost 25 years.
Yeah. We have donated at least a little bit to every country in the world where people live. So, and we actually set out one year, I think it was my 15th anniversary, we set out to make sure we had done that. So we actually organized fundraisers for local organizations in every country of the world and succeeded.
Where does child abuse, just so, you know, people listening, what is child abuse and where does it live for
real?
Where
does it live? Well, where does it live? It lives everywhere. You know, it's amazing to me how often I wheel into communities and I hear people say, well, that kind of thing just doesn't happen here. Or, you know, I've never had any kind of experience with that. So, you know, it's a kind of issue that's really hard to get people involved in. You know, you've certainly got the legal definition of child abuse, that basically physical abuse, sexual abuse, emotional abuse, and neglect, of course, you know, and it kind of runs the gamut of, you know, obviously you hear the dramatic stories that hit the newspaper or hit the media, you know, but there's the everyday forms of abuse too, and a lot of that is what I talk about on the tour is, you know, what can we do about as a culture or as a society or as a neighbor, as a friend, as a peer, to end abuse. You know, I talked to several youth groups on this tour that I'm just finishing, And we talked a lot about bullying. We talked a lot about how easy it is to be influenced, to make fun of that kid in school who sits in the corner and who looks different or might smell funny, or, you know, who is taller or who acts different or maybe has a stutter or, you know, maybe drools because he has a disability, you know, and a friend might make fun of them. And so, you know, it's tempting to go along with that. And so we talked about, you know, how we as, you know, human beings can respond differently. We can refuse to buy into that idea. You know, one of the bumper stickers I have for the Tenderness Tour is "Everyone is beautiful." And that's something that I really firmly believe. And,
I've been that way since I was just a little kid.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've just always just felt like I always stood up for people if people were making fun of people or
yeah.
whatever. You know, I was always, you're going to stop, you know, kind of thing. And I always have had that in me. So I think it's so, it's a big part of what Best Ever You is like, I mean, you're it, you know, you can do anything. And
exactly.
You really can. You just have to put your mind to it. Do you think?
Absolutely. And you know, that's me. I mean, I one of the things I encourage people with is just the idea that, you know, I've never become, and not saying that I couldn't, but you know, I've never become this, you know, hugely famous activist. I'm not rich. I'm not, you know, famous or anything like that. I'm your ordinary average guy who uses my work vacation to do a tenderness tour. You know, I'm on a work vacation this week.
Mm-hmm.
I, you know, put together basically what happens to be a series of smaller fundraisers throughout the year that sometimes add up to become really bigger fundraisers. But really, I mean, we all have something we can do. You know, I mean, I think of my volunteers on the tour. I mean, I have, you know, sitting beside me someone who drove all the way from Indianapolis to come and get me in Elkhart, which is about, you know, a 2.5-3 hour drive, and to bring me back home. I mean, there's a gift in that, in being willing to do that, being able to do that to make a difference. You know, I have people who join me on the road. It's we all have a gift. And, one of the great things about the tour is encouraging people to use their gifts, which you're again, that's exactly what you're doing.
Well, I think, you know, I love it when it's in motion in the form of something like this, because at some point you really made a choice, and I'm curious where it was to not ever be a victim.
You know, I think for me, I certainly did the victim thing for a while, especially in my early 20s, and especially after my wife killed herself. I'll say
right.
I fell into that downward spiral. And I got it. I understood it. But I've had a couple of advantages in my life. And well, one is the disability for me has never felt like a disability. And so for me, I've never felt like I was held back physically. Even though the idea of wheeling around the state that first year was ludicrous, it never really truly felt impossible to me. It felt like something I could do. And, you know, I've always had that one person in my life, and occasionally, you know, it's been a therapist. You know, it's never been the more traditional. You know, I've never had super close relationships with family. You know, it's always, I guess they use the phrase family of choice. I've always had my very supportive friends, my very nurturing environment. I have my tour volunteers at this point in my life who are just absolutely incredible. I think that the point that I reached was really kind of coming to that point right before the tour of saying, okay, something has to change. Either I have to find out that there's good in the world, or I have to find out that there's not. I have to go out. I have to do this. You know, in my case, there was also an element of that faith, of having faith that I could really kind of transcend my physical being. you know, and for me, the first tour was really kind of that moment when I said, okay, you know, clearly, if I'm capable of wheeling around the state for 41 days of wheeling in rain and sun on every kind of road in a snowstorm in Evansville, Indiana, if I can do all of this and I can finish and I can raise money and I can be clearly more to myself credit. And that, I think, was the point where I said, okay, not only am I going to turn myself around, and I came home from that first tour, you know, having been homeless and living on disability at that point, I came home, I got myself into housing, subsidizing initially, but I went back to college. I found a
partner. I think your phone is cutting out a little bit. If it's the battery's cutting out a little bit or something, I'm not sure. We're losing you a little bit.
Oh,
can you hear me? Okay. Oh. If you do get disconnected, just call back into the line. I'll hold the show open. But in the meantime, while we're waiting for you to, are you there? While we're waiting for him to come back on the line, let me just tell a little bit more about him. He's also the founder and artistic director for Heart and Soul Film Festival, a brand new film festival, and Indiana's first cause-oriented film festival. And it's dedicated to finding creative ways to address social justice issues. And, of course, he's also the founder and publisher for The Independent Critic. And you can look at that website at theindependentcritic.com. And we'll see if we can get him back on the phone here. Richard, if you're listening, you call 714-868-0220. And if anyone would like to speak with Richard, if he does come back on the line, you can call 714-868-0220. I thought we might have a little bit of reception problem since he is calling in on a cell phone. But at least so far we've gotten to talk to him about the Tenderness Tour. Again, the Tenderness Tour is just an amazing tour through Indiana, and it's all dedicated to providing peaceful homes for children. And it's an Indiana-based organization really committed to doing that. And he travels around the state of Indiana. He not just travels around, he doesn't walk around. He wheels around the state of Indiana in his wheelchair, raising money for these organizations. So just an amazing, amazing person. And we're here today to get some moments here with him, to speak with him about everything that he's doing. And then his new book, The Hallelujah Life, was released in May 2012, and it's a collection of poetry, reflections, and short stories centered around his own healing journey and living a life that transcends one's experiences. So he's amazing, and he's back with us here on the line, I think. Do we have better cell phone reception? No, it's okay. I figured actually that might happen, so I just sort of read a little. It's okay. It's live radio.
That's life on the road.
Yeah, it is. It's live radio and life on the road, and anything can happen, and I was waiting for it, so it's okay. While you were gone, what we talked about was this film festival that you have founded, and I'm wondering how that's going, the Heart and Soul Film Festival. Is that launched up and off the ground or still in idea mode, or what's happening with that?
Actually, what happened with that, I've actually started calling it the Tenderness Film Project because I wanted to tie it into the tour. Because I just finally accepted, you know, I as I'm getting older, I'm kind of slowing down with some of the physical touring. And so, you know, there's been that little part of me that wants to move away from the word tenderness and kind of branch out. And then I think that there just came this point where I said, you know, this is so, you know, integrated into who I am that I really just have to keep going with it. So,
I don't think you should change that name. I think it's brilliant, actually. I even think the Heart and Soul thing is pretty cool too. But what's it called again? The Tenderness
Film Project.
Yes, perfect. I think that's so cool. I was going to ask you too, on Tenderness Tour, is there a website people can go to learn more about that? People were asking questions on Twitter.
Actually, they can. They have TendernessTour.com.
Oh, perfect. Okay, so TendernessTour.com gets you more information about that, and then Tenderness Film Project. How's that going? I introduced you to a gal I know in Indiana who runs the Heartland Film Festival in email just a little bit ago. Her name is Amy Pozak, and I thought you guys, she is just, do you know her by any chance already?
Oh, I do. Absolutely.
Oh, you do? Oh, cool. Okay, yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's right. That's how we got introduced. Duh. Yeah, no, kidding. Yeah, she introduced us and had you send the... Yeah, I mean, I just can't even imagine how much fun you guys must have talking about movies all the time.
Oh, she's awesome. Yeah, absolutely.
I've known her for like, oh, gosh, I don't even know how long I've known Amy now for, and I've never actually been able to meet her in person yet. We talk on the phone, we talk in email, we talk in social media, but I have not gotten to Indiana yet, and I think I'm going to get shamed into needing to go there. It's like, terrible of me. But I love her. And
she's awesome.
Oh, yeah, an amazing person. And what together are you doing anything with the films then? Sorry about that. I totally spaced.
That's all right. No, it's really more just networking. It seems like our circles kind of intertwine. And so any time that we kind of find a way to collaborate on something, we do that. And, and she is so into different parts of the community, especially with film, that, you know, she's awesome. And she's one of them, and as I'm sure you have experienced, she's one of the most encouraging people around.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
So
yeah,
I try to surround myself with those.
There are moments when I've just been like, I don't think I can do best ever you anymore. And she's like, sure you can, and you will, and you're going to. It's cute.
Yeah.
So, okay, well, that's amazing. And if what would people do? Everybody loves, I don't know of anybody who doesn't love movies. And I would think cause-oriented films would be, amazing. How do people get involved with that if they, if they want to submit a film to your film festival or be involved or branch it out across the country? What do people just get in touch with you or how do you do that?
Yeah, the best way to do it is to go through theindependentcritic.com. You can contact me at richard@theindependentcritic.com. It really has kind of started as kind of just an offshoot of the film website. I see so many films. And I already, already I have kind of that reputation of being socially involved. And so I tend to get a lot of social justice cause-oriented cinema. And in fact, the project debuted on this tour. I showed three short films in one location and then one short film in another location. And I just kind of integrate them into the presentations that I do. I picked films that were really supporting what I'm doing out here. The three films I picked, one of them was Sharon Wright's Change for a Dollar, which is a marvelous film about a gentleman who's homeless who changes multiple lives with $1. It's so perfect for what the Tenderness Tour does and what I stand for, and the fact that I say one person can make a difference in the world. So I love that film. There's a film called Revealed that talks about the spiritual journey. There's a film called The Legacy about a child who believes that his father is a superhero. Mm-hmm. I mean, all three of these were what I'm calling now my Tenderness Award winners. That means that I take them out into communities, into alternative settings. I show them to audiences that may not otherwise get to see good quality independent films. And, when I do them as fundraisers, the filmmakers also get 50% of anything we raise. It's a win-win. I get to show quality films out in the community. Filmmakers get encouraged to make these kind of films. So I think it works for everyone.
Yeah, and you've got that critic behind you. So, it's kind of got that seal of approval on it already, because if it's not a good movie, it's not going to be going with you, I'm guessing.
I'm
so,
not
it's got the seal of me. Exactly. So it's kind of been screened by you, and yeah. I think that's so cool. But I'm going to ask you what came first, the Tenderness Tour or the Independent Critic?
Oh, by far the Tenderness Tour.
Okay.
It really, the very first thing I ever did as what I guess you would call an activist was I organized a 24-hour arts festival called the Compassion Street Arts Festival. I did that in Indianapolis in 1988, and that was my first clue that I, number one, I had a gift for organizing events and that I could get people united together. The guy who had the theater agreed to donate the facility if I could book 24 hours of entertainment and get everyone to show up. He,
yeah.
of course, thinking that I would never do it. And, of course, I did. So we had a marvelous time. We got some of the top music acts in Indianapolis. It was a good festival. It didn't raise a ton of money, but it raised enough that I knew, okay, there's something to this. I can do this. And so a year later, I ended up going on the road.
And so what gifts you have? But you're so inspirational. You have so many gifts, it's hard to sort through them all, really. And it seems like you were gifted with brilliance as well. Did you know as a kid how smart you were?
I had no clue. I had no clue. I mean, like I said, I was a C student. Nobody really tapped into it. My parents had been told, first of all, that I wouldn't survive. So the fact that I even survived was amazing. They were told that I would be severely developmentally challenged if I did survive. And for a while, I kind of fell into that disability stereotype. I went to a special school for individuals with disabilities, and then they just over time figured out that, okay, there's more, you know, he has amazing potential here. Let's see what he can do. I think it really took finding a teacher who celebrated the idea that I learned experientially. I'm not the greatest book learner. You know, if you sit me down and just give me nothing but a test, I'm going to fail. I'm not good at learning that way. But if you let me experience something, if you let me share my knowledge through a project or a lot of what I did in college, I was a theater minor in college. I would write plays about, you know, everything. A lot of my tougher classes, like astronomy and the sciences, the professor would allow me to write a play about it that would show my knowledge. And that would take the place because, I could share everything in that play, but if you asked me those same questions in a test format, I would never get them.
That's interesting. I used to have to do that in history. I looked at the teacher and I'm like, if you give me a history test and you give me multiple choice, I'm going to get an F. But if you let me write about it, I'm not kidding either. I can do math and things like that, but that history stuff, it does not stick in. It goes in one ear and right out the other unless I can write about it. And I have to write maybe a story about it or something, or incorporate the characters and incorporate the historical figures into characters or do something very different than that. And I think I took almost every history exam in high school far different than multiple guests. Because it was just that.
I love that teachers tap into that. When you have a creative educator who's willing to go with that and say whatever it takes to reach this child, I think that's amazing.
Yeah,
and
I do too.
I'm a little bit saddened that it took me until college to find that, but I'm so glad I found it.
Yeah, I think you've definitely got it with you now. I mean, I look at this book and I gosh, you are a gifted writer. Wow.
Thank you.
How's the book doing, and where can we buy it? And it's called The Hallelujah Life, and how's it doing,
yeah.
and all that good stuff about the book?
The Hallelujah Life is doing really well. It is available on Amazon.com and a lot of the online retailers. I know you can get it through BN.com, the Barnes & Noble retailer. Let's see, if you're in Indianapolis, there's a bookstore called Book Mamas that is carrying it. Let's see, of course, you could get it through tendernesstour.com as well. I do have I have it for sale on there. Sold a lot of them on this tour, which was pretty exciting, just because I had so many speaking appearances, and of course I take it with me when I do those. It's also available for Amazon Kindle, so you can get it that way.
Books are sold. You could even, if it's not there and you don't want to order it online, you could even order it through the bookstore just walking in, couldn't you? You could say, hey, I'd like to
copy
of
this.
You
absolutely can.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it's a little graphic in part, so, you probably, if you're thinking it's a good book for a kid to read or something like that, you probably need to exercise some caution. I think that's mostly at the beginning. It's not all throughout. It's mostly at the beginning.
I made a decision, and it was challenging. One of the reasons it took me a while to write The Hallelujah Life was that it was hard to balance being truthful about my past, which contains a lot of violence and a lot of really horrific abuse, but also to get to the point where you're showing the healing and the miracles that have happened and the goodness that has happened, and the fact that I do believe that love is more powerful than hate. And I really wanted that to come through in the book. But for me to do that, I really had to acknowledge some of the hate.
My jaw dropped. I'm like, you're kidding me. You've been through all of this, and I'm really not kidding. I said, you know, to my husband, I'm like, this book just came into me, and I'm absolutely shocked that someone has gone through this. And then I became inspired and still shocked by how vulnerable you made yourself to the world. I mean, this is you being incredibly truthful about the things that have occurred to you. And then I thought, are these people in jail? You know, I got angry with you. I got, you know, that kind of thing. And it seems like, you know, not to be a what do my kids call that when you give away the end of the book, whatever that is, or the movie, whatever. But, you know, it gets lighter and lighter and lighter.
Yeah. And I do intentionally toss some humor in there, even during some of the rougher parts, which people like. And if you ever hear me speak, that's very much how I am when I'm speaking in public, too. I will say the hardcore truth, but I laugh a lot, and that's my daily life. And that was real important to me. You know, I never wanted people to forget, even in the hardest parts of the book, that there was hope. And of course, the people who bought the book and know me already know that. But, you know, as the book has really started to branch out now, and it is really starting, the word is getting out, it's growing. And, you know, so I'm starting to get kind of the same positive feedback from people who don't know me. And, you know, and so they're kind of having to go through that really rough part, not realizing, okay, this guy really is okay at the end. Or, you know, at least he's on that healing journey, and there's a lot to celebrate. So,
I don't gather from you in speaking with you or through this book that you ever want anybody to feel sorry for you.
Oh, I don't like that. Yeah, no, I don't. I don't want anyone to feel sorry for me. I also did not want to minimize the life experiences that I went through. They were horrific. I would never wish them on anyone. It's one of the reasons I'm doing the tour for 23 years. I don't want children to have to go through this kind of abuse. I will fight like crazy so that children don't suffer like this, so that there is a peaceful home for every child. I may never get there. I'm, you know, probably will never, you know, end every incident of abuse, but I'm going to do everything I can for every child that I can, because I don't want them to experience this. I don't want them to have to fight through these obstacles to realize there's hope in the world. I don't want people to reach 25 years old and not know that they can be loved and held without fear of abuse, or, you know, without questioning someone else's motives. That's horrific. And so I did not want to minimize that with the book. But the hope had to be stronger. Hope had to be stronger. So
when you write,
empowering.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, the one thing my jaw did drop quite a few times. I mean, really, I was like, wow. One of the questions I had for you was, when you write something like this and you say, this happened to me and this person did this to me or whatever, do you have to have their permission in order to do so, or do you have to change names, or do people get mad? Do people feel exposed and they're really hiding, or, you know, what happens with all of the things? Because, you know, you've really said this happens, and it happens. It happened to me, and it still happens to other people.
Uh-huh.
And people are scared. People live in the scared zone of, I did this to you, but don't you ever say a word.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and it's funny, I wrote a poetry collection back probably about 10 or 12 years ago, that where I talked, and it was a lot more graphic. It was a lot angrier. You could tell that I was still fairly fresh in the healing process. But I was also kind of in a fear zone where I didn't, I was not as vulnerable, and I did not, name names and places and things as much or as clearly. That said, I was also very cognizant of that those kinds of issues with this book. Even though, you know, I was very careful to write exactly what I remembered, and, you know, and to be truthful and to not dramatize. You know, I read it through a few times, making sure, okay, you know, that, so I didn't over-dramatize something, or if I, you know, making sure that my memories were in check. So I was fairly careful. Also, my perpetrator did serve some time in jail for another assault, not for mine. So he's not in jail. And so I did not want to aggravate that situation and maybe create more risk for myself.
Right.
But I very intentionally did name his first name. And it was funny, I was doing a reading of the book last night, and I honestly, I tend to forget that I put his name in the book because it's the first time I've done that. And it's the first time I've really talked about Jeff. You know, Jeff was my perpetrator. And
right.
If Jeff ever reads the book, Jeff's going to know who he was. So I love that. But I was also intentional about not putting his last name in the book.
Right.
So I was pretty careful.
Yeah. No. Yeah. I wondered how that worked because you know my
and I did get permission from some people.
Sure. Sure. I would imagine you would have to.
Yeah.
You know, and I know I've talked to you before. You know, because our family is the survivor. I don't use the word victim of a very violent crime against my brother Justin Hamilton in Minneapolis, and you know, several years have passed and. We're all still dealing with it.
Yes.
It. I don't know how that will come out 20 years from now, or what he'll do with it, because he's, you know, he's under 30, and but you know, we've got a kiddo who this happened to with he was born with fetal alcohol syndrome, and these people just brutally beat him up in the rain, tied him to a tree for two solid days in the Minnesota area, and they're serving time and so forth, but it's terrifying to talk about because you don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah. It is. It's scary to talk about, but I guess for me, I'd reached the point where it was scarier not to talk about it.
I
felt like my healing process had gotten to the point that it was hurting my ability to love and be loved, to not talk about things, to not talk about some of my obstacles in connecting with human beings, to talk about some of the fear of touch, talk about some of my body image issues, those things I really needed to start talking about. And so this for me was kind of going the next level. The way I explained it was when I wrote the first Poetry Connect collection, I was really trying to tell my story. This book, I was trying to build relationships.
Yeah.
That's what it was about.
Yeah. How... you know, I don't know if you have these numbers and so forth, but or how do you really, like, if this is happening to a child, and I'm guessing there's probably not that many kids listening to this show right now or will ever listen to it on replay and say, you know, this is happening to me, I better call someone. How do kids get out of those situations? Do they ever, do you have to... Do you know what I'm trying to ask? Like, if something's happening to a kid, God, what do they do?
Well, you know,
how
one of the things I talk to, when I talk to the youth, even the youth group, you know, this week about it, you know, we process through those things of talking about who in your life is safe enough that if you had this horrible, horrible, horrible secret that you needed to tell someone, who would you tell? You know, and most of these were teenagers. They weren't small children. But I think it would still kind of apply on a simpler level with small children of, you know, figuring out who the safe person is in your life. Who can you go to and tell? And for me, part of that is just building up children who do recognize that there is bad touch.
That there's wrong, yeah. Because I don't think an adult is going to stand up and raise their hand and go, yep, I'm an abuser. Yep, that's me. I'm right here. You know, kind of
exactly.
Thing. You know, they're going to hide and pretend or whatever that they're, you know, I don't know all the makings of that type of person, but they're not going to be open that they're hurting children or anything. So I think that's very, very brilliant. I know some of our schools do that too, with some of that teaching of abuse and things like that. And if this is happening to you, you know, contact here and so forth. But it does seem to me like people get into their 20s and 30s and then say, this happened to me.
Oh, absolutely. I think that, well, and, you know, I
or more or whatever.
I was kind of an example, you know, because mine really did come out shortly before it ended. A neighbor saw something going on a patio, and it was abuse. And told my mother. My mother did what my mother knew to do. She went to my church. The elders in my church really failed her miserably,
mm-hmm.
Because they didn't believe, and they didn't report, and they didn't do all those things that churches and every human being in Indiana, anyway, is mandated to do. Because in Indiana, I don't know if it's the same in Maine, in Indiana, if you suspect abuse or neglect, you're legally required to report it.
Report it.
So, you know, so the church failed in that obligation to do that. And, you know, and so now for me, as, you know, someone who's also going into ministry, you know, part of what I'm looking at is becoming the pastor that I didn't have growing up, the pastor who would protect me, who would do the right thing, who would say that, you know, we will not have a congregation where abusers of, you know, children or of women or, you know, that type of thing, that we're not going to shield that. We're not going to protect that. We are going to create safe sanctuary. So,
I wondered what you were doing. I wondered if your journey would go political or spiritual or what was next for you. So it sounds like you're kind of doing all of it. Do you think you have any political?
Yeah, I ran for office once, and I'm not sure that I'm made for that. I certainly have an interest in the political realm because I obviously think that's part of the solution. I always include city leaders when I do a tenderness tour. You know, I meet with mayors or city councils or whatever I can to talk about legislation. I research every city that I go into, so I know their abuse statistics. I know about recent cases. I know what they do and I know what they don't do. And so I go in to these meetings and I go in informed, and it usually surprises people. So I certainly have an interest in political, but I don't know that I ever see myself as running for office again. We'll see.
Yeah.
Certainly the spiritual realm, the religious realm, I think probably more than anything, it's really, truly, it's as a writer. I think that's where probably one of my biggest gifts lie, and as a speaker and as an activist.
Yeah, I think I agree with that assessment of yourself. I think that's, you nailed it right there, because I could see this all being its own movie.
Yeah, I've had a couple of inquiries into that kind of thing. I think it's so complex, it would be really hard to turn into anything, but who knows? Maybe one of these days.
It could do it. I love, I don't know if I want to give away the back of the book a little bit. Do you care if I do that? Because I think... I really want people to buy this book and especially read the back of it. I'm sorry, but I hate it when people do that, when they pick up a book and read the last page. But do, because it'll make you buy the book and the first part of it, too. I mean, it's just a really cool book. But in the back of the book, there are 100 hallelujahs. And I'm wondering, this is another point in this book where I went, you've got to be kidding me. After everything that's happened to him, he's going to now... Give us some good. I thought for sure it was going to be poor me, poor me, poor me, and no.
No. That was really important to me. I really, part of that for me was taking the power back. You know, because you'll notice if you look at the 100 hallelujahs that they're not all great life experiences.
No, they're not.
And that's not... And I'm not celebrating the badness. What I'm saying, once again, is that the fact that I've survived as a loving and gentle human being proves, at least in my life, that love is more powerful than violence, than sexual abuse, than the losses I've had, and the disability that I've been challenged with. Love is more powerful than all of it. And if, I tell you what, if love can overcome everything I've been through, then I tell you what, love is more powerful than anything.
Isn't
in
it?
My book.
Love is the coolest thing. I was just emailing somebody today who's going, she was emailing me, she's going through a little bit of a rough time in her marriage and all this stuff. And I said, boy, I think, I'm not spying divorce here. I just think you guys are having a scuffle, and find the love. I found myself saying that, you know, just go back to finding the love, because it's there. You guys are just duking it out right now. Just go back and find it. And I don't know what they'll do, but I just thought that was a theme for everything today. It's just all about love, and no matter what happens, you find the love. And I so totally agree with you that it's more powerful than anything.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And
I really wanted to end the book that way.
For me,
I couldn't think of a better way to end it out that way than to be able to say, okay, now let's take everything you've just read, and then of course I tossed in say little things that have been big influences on my life. Some things that were really kind of embarrassing that you know, you go back to that idea of vulnerability. Some things that I may not have ever wanted to say, but I needed to acknowledge them as hallelujah moments in my life. Pieces of my life that shaped me into this loving, gentle human being that I am.
And isn't it cool that you've done that, and people aren't saying, oh my God, I can't believe you said that. People are like, kudos to you for saying it and being a force in the world. Totally. I mean, I just think it's so powerful. And I love this. And on page 115, you say, I have a ritual. Am I okay to read part of it? I wanted to, permission?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes.
It says, I have a ritual that I've performed every single day for nearly 20 years. Every single day, I tell one person they are beautiful. Oh.
And I do.
Oh, that is just, it almost makes you cry. That is the coolest thing. And why do you do that?
I grew up believing that love and beauty were only sexual, that was the only value I had in my life. And I remember the first time I felt like someone was okay with my physical being, and it had nothing to do with sexuality, and they weren't going to hit me, and they weren't going to hurt me, and I knew that, and I trusted it 100%. And I also remember encountering someone, and I had just randomly told them that they'd made some sort of negative comment about themselves, and I had just looked at them and said, no, I think you're really beautiful. No planning, no, you know, premeditation in there. It was just a spontaneous thing, and the look on this person's face was just incredible. And you just got this sense that they'd never heard that before in their life. And that's kind of what I've learned from, you know, that first tour and other tours. There are so many people who never hear the purity of I love you, or they're beautiful, or they're okay exactly the way they are. And for me, that's what I'm really saying. When I'm telling someone they're beautiful, I'm saying, you're perfect right now, the way you are.
Amen. Isn't that just, wouldn't it be nice? I would really almost kill for a day that I didn't look in the mirror, turn around and go, God, my butt's fat. I really would. I guess there's something about that. You know, and my husband will look at me and go, you're beautiful the way you are. Stop, you know, kind of thing. And but you know what I mean? We beat ourselves up.
We do. We do. And I still do it. I'm not saying I don't struggle with it. I'm still human. I have days where I look in the mirror and I'm like, oh, wow. I'm understanding why you're in your 40s and single. But, but you know, I mostly get through that. And, you know, it's a daily challenge. And that's why you surround yourself with people who reinforce who you are and the wonder of who you are. And like Amy, who will call you a superhero when you exactly need to feel like you're a superhero.
Isn't that interesting how she has a knack for doing that? I've gotten cards. I think I owe her so many darn cards, too. I mean, she is so good with cards, and I am, but I'm not. You know, it just depends on what's going on. But I have beautiful stained glass in my house from her. I have so many beautiful gifts from Amy. I love you, Amy. If you're listening, Amy Pozak, we both love you. So,
if she's not listening, she will be. We know
she
that.
She will be, yeah. She'll listen on replay or whatever. But we love you, girl. Tell me, in the back of I'm laughing at this. Oh, you haven't really lived until you've gone shoe shopping with a footless man?
Yes.
That? Oh my God.
Oh. They thought, because I'm a part-time seminarian, they thought I was kidding about doing that. So one day on a weekend intensive class, I took them shoe shopping.
Oh,
it's
sure
a great experience. I love going shoe shopping. And I try on the shoes, usually heels, because I'm just a little weird. But
yeah, it's okay.
I have fun with it. I don't have feet anyway, so why not?
I am the biggest shoe hound ever, and bless you for doing that, because, you know, it speaks volumes right there about who you are.
Absolutely.
It's just the coolest thing. Okay, we're going to get really serious for a second, because I'm just really serious. You're thanking someone for removing a gun from your hands. What was that? Do you mind my asking?
I don't mind your asking. Someone from removing a gun from my hand. That was Melissa.
Mm-hmm.
That was fairly early in my healing process. I had a couple of really dramatic suicide attempts. That was one of them. And this was a woman who was a fellow theater student and who had kind of gone through some similar rough experiences, but she was really just the first person that I ever realized truly loved me as is. I was, the year that I lost my feet and had all of those losses, I was dancing in a musical at Indiana University, Purdue University in Indianapolis, and danced off, because people on crutches are apparently not supposed to dance. I danced off the side of the stage. Bad move on my part. So I injured my feet, got the feet taken care of, got them all wrapped up, and was committed to the fact that I was going to finish the show. I was determined. And I did. And a lot of why I did was because, you know, Melissa was by my side the whole time. And she, at one point, you know, after all the trauma and everything started to really spiral, she did. She took a gun out of my hand because I had told her that I had one with me, and I told her that I was getting ready to go use it. Literally, I mean, sitting in her office one day, she just said, give me the gun.
Aren't we all lucky that you've never committed suicide? And what do you have a message out there to share with people to help people who might be thinking about committing suicide so that they get the help they need?
I think my biggest message is to, I don't ever say necessarily go on living for someone else. But I do say to reach out. I do say to that there is someone who depends on your existence. There is someone in your life. You may not know who they are. You may not completely believe it, but they delight in your existence. I've always had that person. I've always had that person who just really made me feel needed and wanted in my daily life. So reach out. One of the things when I was going through this period was I learned I could never trust my first instinct, because my first instinct was always to be self-destructive. And so I learned I had to go for my second or my third instinct. So, I think my life is an example that, you know, you can be in the midst of all the trauma and the dramas and really not see the amazing potential. And you know, and there is a kind of a tragedy side to Melissa, is that about a year and a half ago, she took her own life.
Oh.
One of my greatest losses of recent years, because she just reached that point where she didn't reach out. She didn't any longer see that potential. And it's tragic. And you know, and you do, you leave behind so many people who, you know, it's kind of like we experience with our abuse or you've experienced with your brother. I mean, the incident may end, but the trauma, it ripples.
It ripples, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I'm actually going to introduce you to someone. I thought I was introducing you to Amy, but I don't know why I thought that. Hello, Elizabeth. Base case, it's all the... it's been a busy week. Anyway, but I think you would really love meeting Wayne Scott Lucas. He devotes so much of his time to suicide prevention and so forth. He is a pretty famous Hollywood stylist. He styled Janet Jackson and, I mean, a ton of people. And he does a lot with Best Ever You and our Motivation Marathon. And I think you would thoroughly enjoy meeting him, and you would have tons to talk about there as well.
Great.
I'll do that in email, but I want to. I just want to give you an eye on time. We have about 5 minutes left, and for anybody ever thinking something's impossible, or your victim, or anything like that, listen to this. This is from page 109 of Richard's book, The Hallelujah Life. It says the poetry number 63. It's 100 Hallelujahs. Number 63 is the poetry reading fundraiser that served as my first outreach event. It only raised $10. But it convinced me that I could use my talent to make the world a better place.
Yeah. You know, what was cool about that was that they actually wrote me this wonderful thank you note for that $10. I mean, and this was a crisis line that I raised money for that I had called numerous times telling them I was suicidal or just needing to talk to someone. They were wonderful with me. I'll always be grateful for them, and I'll always be grateful that they said, thank you for giving us $10. And
look,
and
all
truly,
that's happened. It's amazing, isn't it? Just absolutely, absolutely incredible. All of the things that you can do. You've also, I don't know where the 5 minutes went. It came down to two, so sorry about that. I must have looked at it. But you've, whatever, you're not good with math either. Anyway, but before we go, I just want to mention your websites again. It sounds like the independentcritic.com is a very good way to reach you, and then tendernesstour.com. You've also won some amazing awards for everything that you've done, including Prevent Child Abuse America's highest honor and the Donna J. Stone Award. And just amazing. You're winning awards for everything that you're doing. And I just want to just personally, on behalf of everybody in the Best Ever You Network, just wish you so much more continued success and blessings and everything in your life that you are trying to do. I hope you have a wonderful time and keep reaching people. You make a big, big difference to the world. So I hope you know that.
I think that I'm fortunate enough to be surrounded with people who remind me of that when I forget it, and hopefully I do the same for them. You know, because I think a great example of Best Ever You is the fact that, you know, we're all a network, we're all a community, we all need each other. So,
All right. Well,
I will definitely keep on.
Thank you. Thank you so much for being with us for the hour, and safe journeys going back home. And thank that person, whoever they are, for picking you up.
I'll do that.
And driving you back home. It's awesome. All right. Lots of love. And to everybody listening, just a big shout out to Richard for being with us. And you can follow him again. Just one more. His book is The Hallelujah Life, and you can visit him online at theindependentcritic.com. So much going on, and so much he has so much love to give the world, and we just wish him the very best. So with that said, we are going to take a few days off, and we will be back Wednesday, September 12th, with filmmaker Kate Chaplin and her movie Ingenue. So we're very excited to have you with us, and we just want to thank you all for being with us. Take care, everybody, and enjoy your weekend, and we will see you Wednesday the 12th. Take care. Thank you.